Let's log on to the internet, shall we? Brought to you by Geico. You got a choice of ways that you can save on car insurance. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. You can go online to geico.com or stop by the Geico office nearest you. Let's get it.
Number five.
Chris Mack is out as the Louisville coach 20 games into his fourth season. Mack was considered the darling when he was hired just 4 years ago. But after a 64-52 road loss to Virginia on Monday, and when one of his veteran players, Malik Williams, was asked if the message was still getting through from Mack, Williams said, I don't want to answer that right at this time. That apparently gave the rudderless leadership at Louisville all they needed. Now, I give credit to both Louisville and to Mack for realizing this thing wasn't working. And that was one of the comments, actually, that Mack made today when he confirmed his exit. He has 3 years left on his contract. There is a buyout there, seems to be negotiated, sounds like it's a $12 million price tag that's owed to him. So when he says he has no ill will towards Louisville, I guess we know what he means.
He didn't go in there with the Dino Gaudio treatment. Like, look, you give me this amount of money and I'll make sure that, that would be an extortion attempt. Can't have that. That whole tenure was one in a long line of examples where the obvious choice for the job doesn't necessarily mean that it's the right choice for the job, or that when you actually get to this thing that makes the most amount of sense, you come to find out that it was a wrong way of thinking. And to me, the takeaway for Chris Mack at Louisville is a tale as old as time in college basketball specifically. Hot, up-and-coming young coaches that national media guys tell you are the next big thing, because they know how to work the national media perspective behind the scenes, they might not have the right temperament in the end. Like Archie Miller at Indiana is a prime example of, hey, Archie Miller's a good basketball coach, and he maximized what he could do at Dayton. But that doesn't necessarily mean he has the temperament to be able to handle a job like Indiana at this point in his career. Chris Mack is a relatively young guy, came from Xavier, foregone conclusion that he was going to take that job when Rick Pitino left. And if you strip away all the other issues that are happening at Louisville right now, like you mentioned, they don't have a president, they don't have an AD, they're still dealing with the aftermath of all the criminal behavior that's taken place at Louisville. He just didn't have the right temperament for the job. And when you lose local media, you then start to lose local fans, and nobody wants to hear those excuses anymore. Nobody wants to hear context anymore. And Louisville, like a lot of other top jobs in this country, Giulio, there's a want-to factor to win when you're there, and Louisville has a long history of winning as a basketball program, but you do have to find the right guy who gets it. And Chris Mack, turns out, was not that guy. I don't know who you go out and get next.
You bring Ricky P back? Because since they did that with the football coach, his name I can't come up with right now.
Was it Bobby Petrino?
Petrino, thank you.
Yeah, man, I don't know. I don't know if you bring Rick Pitino back. Mark Godfrey's available, right?
Anyway. Got man.
Yeah. Next.
Number four.
Carolina Hurricanes bounced back from a deflating loss over the weekend to the New Jersey Devils with a very dramatic overtime win over the Vegas Golden Knights. 4-3, Sebastian Aho breaking through to get the winner in OT with 1:11 left in the game. Now, the Golden Knights came into this game looking for their eighth consecutive road victory, and they tied this thing up in the third period to send it to overtime. But again, the Canes, to their credit, one consistency that they've had is that when they need their best players to step up, they absolutely have. You've seen that with Andrei Svechnikov. Obviously, Sebastian Aho has been on one. Here is Rod Brind'Amour, head coach of the Canes, after last night's win.
Oh, I feel great. It was a good game. You know, we had a little lull there, but thought it was a great game, entertaining. Good finish, obviously, and really tough to find anyone that wasn't good. We played really solid. The first period was great. Came out, did everything we needed to. Should have been probably ahead. Couple weird bounces there, and then got ahead. And, you know, obviously they got a couple of late ones, but I liked how we got right back on in overtime. And, you know, it was certainly an exciting overtime.
The curiosity, Giulio, is how they're going to handle who's in net over the next couple of days. As we get into February, the schedule gets even more ridiculous as they include those makeup games from the December that nobody wants to remember. So they're at Ottawa on Thursday, and they're back home against the Devils and the Sharks in a back-to-back on Saturday and Sunday. Freddie Anderson was in net last night, but we've been kind of anticipating Antti Raanta to, you know, be healthy and fill in at one point. I mean, my guess is you probably play him Saturday, right?
No, because it's the Devils again on Saturday.
But it's the Devils again, so you probably play him. You play him Sunday again. You play him Sunday on the back-to-back.
Yes, you play him Sunday when they play San Jose. Because, listen, we could say a lot of things about Rod Brindamore, but his memory is very good.
Yeah, and we saw
he has a lot of good qualities, but that might be
he has a very good memory.
Unbelievable memory.
Yeah, was it the old Game of Thrones? Lannister always pays his debts, mm-hmm. right? That sort of thing. There's a little bit of that with Rod too, where he remembers these things and he'll make it known. Next up,
number three.
All right, if you're a Bills fan, I'm going to need you to step away from the radio just for a second,
oh,
please.
No.
I'm going to give you the shot and then the chaser. The shot is the NFL films forever have mic'd players up and they've gotten the best sound. They're better at this than anybody. When we're talking about promoting and long-term effects of why something has become popular, you got to put NFL films on there, Joe. It's on the list somewhere. I'm not saying it's reason number one. They did it again, though. Listen to this clip from Travis Kelce by the time Josh Allen hits Gabriel Davis, he's on the sidelines, he's talking to Patrick Mahomes, he's talking to Tariq Hill, and he's plotting what the Chiefs can do in these 13 seconds.
And now the Chiefs have got to somehow get in field goal range.
Hey, 10. They might man you up. I'm saying go outside and come back in like you're running a route outside. That way when you come back in, I can get in the way.
They actually have a chance to get Bucker in field goal range here.
Hey. They're playing like that seam is open.
8 seconds left, down 3.
Catch Mahomes' voice in there, Joe. Do it, Kelce. Do it.
Yeah. Kelce wasn't kidding when he said in the post game, like, yeah, Patrick Mahomes was like telling me to do it. So, yeah.
Okay. All right, Bills, come on back. Because here's the good thing. The Bills and the hashtag Bills Mafia is known for raising money for charitable causes. They've done this going back to Andy Dalton. Remember when he got him into the playoffs the first year, three years ago?
Yes.
First time 3 years ago. So they're known for this. So the Chiefs, borrowing a page from the Bills Mafia here, have now raised more than $178,000 for the Oshie Children's Hospital in Buffalo. Because Bills Chiefs fans have started donating $13 at a time for those 13 seconds to the Children's Hospital in Buffalo. $178,000. That's pretty cool. Not helping Sean McDermott sleep at all, don't get me wrong.
No.
But if you could take a negative and turn it into a positive, good thing. Good for the Chiefs, good for the Bills. And yeah, those NFL films clips. How many people are screaming that we get that? Can we get those mics? How much do those mics cost? Because we need those. You think those TikTok videos, these other Giulio's card, we need those mics, man. What's going on?
Those mics are serious and no.
Like, seriously?
We can't afford them.
We just retrofitted
the studio.
I don't need 78,000. I don't need to tune out the 78,000 people. I just need to tune out Victoria's winning picks. She's killing me.
Next up.
Number two.
To some ACC basketball. We'll start with last night before we get to tonight. Duke was in a tough one against Clemson. That's typical. Brad Brownell's Clemson Tiger basketball teams are usually tough outs. You combine that with Duke not having Trevor Keels for another night. They were in a battle. And to me, the takeaway is that Duke is understanding in critical situations, give it to Paolo Banchero. And he took over. He had some moments last night with some big buckets to make sure that Duke got out of there, Amador Stadium, with a win. Again, without Trevor Keels, we don't know when he's going to come back. Here's Coach K on that hard-fought win last night.
you know, it's a tough loss for them and a great win for us. It would have been the other way, too. I mean, both teams played their hearts out. And it was, I'll tell you what, the basketball has gotten so physical. It was a really physical basketball game. I thought they played great. Brad had them unbelievably prepared. And they played the level of defense that has made him an outstanding coach at Clemson.
That was Mike Krzyzewski after the game, after beating Clemson last night. I'll reiterate the point, and it's something that I always agree with Coach K when he talks about the journey. You know, everybody runs their own race and everything else. I've learned to not get too wrapped up in day-to-day within the conference. Are you showing incremental improvement, even in a loss? Or if it's a close game, did you learn a lesson from a previous close game, apply it, where do you go from there? And that's kind of how I viewed last night, like I brought up with Paolo Banchero. Get him the ball in crucial situations. That's the money move. Everybody else is great, and Duke's not going to get far in the NCAA tournament with all of those pieces playing together. But you have to learn in those moments, which will happen in the NCAA tournament, who needs the ball when it matters the most and get them comfortable with that. Paolo Banchero is that guy, and we saw that last night.
I thought just their demeanor in the final 4 minutes of that game was a lot better than what we saw at Florida State or Miami or even the Ohio State game, where they just really froze in the last 10 minutes of that game against Ohio State. So that part of it's progress. You know who else I thought was pretty good? Sneaky last night, Joe?
Who's that?
Joey Baker.
Yeah, he was.
I mean, he's always going to be better at home. He's always going to be more comfortable at home. But he actually, I believe, had the go-ahead basket with a drive with about two minutes and change left. So I thought that was a big play. I thought it was good to see, just as a group collectively, I thought they showed some more poise in the end game situations, which had, you know, eluded them in the recent. They lost three straight in single-digit games.
Tonight, NC State and Carolina are in action before their meeting on Saturday in Chapel Hill. So Carolina's first up. They got Boston College. That should be at home a win for them. Boston College not very good. The one consistency out of the Tar Heels this year is that the teams below them in the standings, they've been able to take care of business. They've held serve in those games. NC State's the trickier conversation because that's a good Notre Dame team that they're visiting in South Bend. And NC State has been too inconsistent shooting the ball to be able to hang with Notre Dame, who has been, you know, if they get into their offense, can crush it. I mean, as North Carolina fans would know, if you're leaving them wide open, they're going to nail those shots. And NC State's been too inconsistent in terms of shooting. They can go through those scoring droughts. And we know defensively they can also go through some bad streaks. One thing can lead to the other. It'll be a close game, I think, but Notre Dame will probably win this game.
Yeah, Notre Dame's won 9 of 11 since they opened conference play with a loss to Boston College back in December. They're just a team that's found their identity. Blake Wesley, their outstanding freshman guard. That'll be a good matchup between Wesley and Terquavion Smith. We'll see for the Wolfpack. It's when they get the other players going that usually they have their better moments. Casey Morcell's a guy who's kind of come on recently, too, after injury had slowed him down in the middle of the year. So, tough matchup, though. I actually think Notre Dame is going to be... I think Notre Dame will end up being an NCAA tournament team.
I'm with you on that. Next up.
The number one story of the day.
We're number one!
The Baseball Hall of Fame announced their class yesterday. One guy, David Ortiz. He was the only player to surpass the 75% of the vote needed from the Baseball Writers Association. The other names on the list that were important were guys like Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, Sammy Sosa. Specifically to Bonds and Clemens, they've done enough to be Hall of Famers. But they're associated with the steroid era for a variety of different reasons and examples, which makes the inclusion of David Ortiz interesting, because David Ortiz was a name that showed up on a list of players who came up positive for performance-enhancing drugs when Major League Baseball was anonymously testing players ahead of implementing their drug policy, which came a year later. Now, Ortiz never tested positive afterward, and obviously we know the rest of the story. Boston Red Sox winning World Series, the Boston Marathon bombing, where he was a huge pillar of the community and famously said, "This is our effing city," okay? A moment that still sends chills. So, to me, Ortiz is a classic example of what happens in the world of sports, in that if we like you, we will give you the benefit of the doubt. If you're an ass, then we will take great enjoyment in watching you suffer. Aaron Rodgers this week is a prime example of that. He was offended when he talked about this with the Pat McAfee show this week, that, man, people really were happy that I lost because of my... No. People were happy you lost because you're an ass. And that's where things are with Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens. Because if you look at these objectively, there is no difference between David Ortiz and Barry Bonds in terms of PED association. Barry Bonds had Balco, but he also never tested positive, okay? Never tested positive under Major League Baseball's policy after the fact in the same way that David Ortiz. Except that one assaulted the record books over guys that people liked and they didn't like Barry Bonds, where David Ortiz never did any of that stuff, and he brought a World Series, multiple World Series, with the best Boston Red Sox, which will forever make you a huge person because of the history with the Boston Red Sox. I can't make it more cut and dry than that, Julio. But that's why we are where we are with the Baseball Hall of Fame discussion.
Yeah, it's important to note, though, this is one of the... Ortiz is one of the first from the Mitchell Report back in 03, and then the New York Times leak of it, that has now been elected to the Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
Rafael Palmeiro is another name out there that we don't get into, right? But to further illustrate your point, because I think Ortiz gets a lot of benefit of the doubt because of the way he played in the postseason. But to your point, what do you make of Curt Schilling then, who helped the Phillies reach the World Series, who won the World Series with the Diamondbacks, and then, of course, had the bloody sock in the 04? He was spectacular in the playoffs.
Well, because he endorsed a T-shirt that basically said, "Go hang journalists."
And he is not a likable guy, apparently.
And I mean, he's not a likable guy, but when you go after the media, well, then you're torching yourself as it relates to your chances of getting over on Baseball Writers Association.
I'll at least say this for Schilling. His numbers were borderline. You cannot make that case for Roger Clemens, Rafael Palmeiro, or Barry Bonds. Obviously, their numbers were just ridiculous.
The other key difference, too, between Ortiz and these other guys is that Ortiz quietly denied any further use of steroids and the things that dogged other guys throughout the rest of their career. Barry Bonds was defiant in those situations. Guys like Rafael Palmeiro will never live down the finger wagging of Congress, right? Only to find out that those weren't B-12 shots. And of course, Roger Clemens is one of the great red asses of our time. So,
and he misremembered. He misremembered.
He
gave us the word.
Stuff.
Roger Clemens should just be in the Hall of Fame for giving us the word misremembered.
For that, yes.
That wasn't a word before him. Forget the Cy Youngs. He gave us misremember.
I just ask one thing after yesterday's Hall of Fame voting. Take the name Museum off of Cooperstown, because that's not what you are. You're not a museum. You're not telling the full story of baseball. You're telling a selective story of baseball by not including those plaques. Spare me the idea that, well, Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds are already in the Hall of Fame because their tchotchkes are in the Hall of Fame. Yes, there are in there. But when you don't have their plaque and you refuse to put on that plaque the full story, you're no longer a museum. And when people want to ponder why baseball doesn't have the same sizzle for fans today as it used to, you can look to this gatekeeping and a very, very poor way in which they want to hold accountability. You know, it's funny. I was reading an LA Times article today that cracked me up with this particular line. Again, this was from Bill Shakin. It was a longtime columnist. I read his stuff all the time, but he lost me today when he talked about neither his name nor his great accomplishments are hidden. On the official website of Major League Baseball, he's immortalized. Barry Bonds, 762, et cetera, et cetera. But he's being kept out of the Hall of Fame. Boo-hoo. Get over it. He goes on to talk about how the reality is more complex, as it always is. Accountability is an increasingly fleeting concept in this country. He's right. But for this day, baseball experienced accountability. You mean the same baseball that had a commissioner that did not assign same accountability to Astros who cheated and only one person was the fall guy, ultimately, management? Oh, you mean the accountability that allowed Bud Selig, speaking of commissioners, to be inducted into the Hall of Fame through their Veterans Committee? You want to talk about accountability? He was the guy who turned a blind eye to the issues related to performance-enhancing drugs and cashed check after check after 1998. That got everybody back into watching baseball after the strike torched all that goodwill. So a lot of people benefited from performance-enhancing drugs, not just Barry Bonds, not just Roger Clemens, managers, front office executives, TV, writers. Everybody benefited from PEDs. Barry Bonds should not be the one that has to pay for your sins.